This is Jim Sklavounis of Grinderman, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Accra.
Tune in WGXC's new Sunday morning schedule with the Reverend Kim Singletary, and There's a Bright Side Somewhere every morning, every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. That's followed by the teens from Hudson talking about books they've read on Bound by Books. After the local news at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., there's more teens. The Catskill kids from Clubhouse Radio are on at 10 a.m. with lots of music and talk on your community radio station, WGXC.org, 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the Teabacker Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. William J. Kembel is reporting for the Daily Freeman that the Rhinebeck School Board is reviewing whether to conduct their meetings via live stream. The question was discussed during a Board of Education session November 24th. Superintendent Albert Cousins said the technology needed to broadcast meetings through a common platform should be ready within a month. At present, those who wish to view the board meeting must attend in person or wait for a recording, which is later uploaded to YouTube. The board conducted its meeting on video conference platforms from March to June this year and returned to in-person meetings in July. Although the ability to understand what board members are saying has improved during the past several months, the quality of live broadcast is not always the best. State Committee on Open Government Assistant Director Kristen O'Neill said there is a learning curve that has been part of the move to having meetings live streamed, but boards should have it figured out by now. Quote, they need to make efforts to make sure that people can hear. If they are not doing that, they are not really complying with the intent of the open meetings law, which is to allow the public to listen to and, under normal circumstances, also observe the deliberations and decision-making of public bodies. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Amanda Fries is reporting for the Times Union that the state could save as much as $132 million if the use of solitary confinement was reduced in prisons and jails, according to a report released by the Partnership for Public Good. The report, written by the Buffalo Niagara community-based think tank, found that passing the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement, or HALT Act, would save the state and local governments $1.3 billion over 10 years. The finding directly contradicts Governor Andrew Cuomo's reason for withholding support for the HALT legislation. The bill would limit the time a person can spend in segregated confinement to a maximum of 15 consecutive days and create, quote, more humane and effective alternatives, unquote, among other initiatives. Even with broad support among legislators, it did not pass last year after Cuomo claimed it would cost too much to implement. Instead, the governor came to an agreement with the legislature to implement a series of regulations with the same intent as the HALT Act, but with milder changes. Those regulations are still not in effect. Given the multi-billion-dollar deficit the state faces due to the coronavirus pandemic, the Partnership for Public Good argues in its 32-page report that the HALT Act should be passed to help save money. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Alila Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Hudson Planning Board has approved the indoor phase of a conditional use permit for Wild Hudson, a community and office space in development in the building owned by the Galvin Foundation at the South 3rd and Union Streets in the city. Wild Hudson co-creators Hillary France and Lucas Crump do not plan to make physical changes to the structure. The space will offer Wi-Fi, a cafe and meeting room for workers, and a gallery for local artists, seasonal outdoor market, outdoor and indoor family-friendly activities, and educational and networking events, according to a presentation made to the Planning Board November 10th. The space will be open 7 days a week from 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. weekdays and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on weekends. WILD will offer membership and hours and for the co-working space, France said. The cost of membership was not disclosed. France said they have not been published because there are many components that she and Crump want to make sure work together. The proposal was divided into two phases by the Planning Board, which approved its indoor use. This allows France and Crump to start their indoor business while fulfilling the conditions of board members who were reluctant to approve the open-ended outdoor use request. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and read more about these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday should be sunny with a high near 47 and a low around 30. Monday, there are periods of rain predicted. There's a 100% chance of rain with a high near 52 and a low around 49 with more rain Monday night. Showers are likely again on Tuesday. There's a 60% chance with a high near 52 and a low around 32. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson Radio for open ears. Tune in WGXC's new Sunday morning schedule with the Reverend Kim Singletary and There's a Bright Side Somewhere every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. That's followed by the teens from Hudson talking about books they've read on Bound by Books. After the local news at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., there's more teens. The Catskill kids from Clubhouse Radio are on at 10 a.m. with lots of music and talk on your community radio station, WGXC.org, 90.7 FM.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of John Mason of Chatham, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
Hi, I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Columbia Green Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I am Lena. I am a student of MC Smith. I'm a elementary school, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
And we're normally joined by our friends, Nico and Mashuda and Fatia and AJ. But today it's just the three of us talking about some books and bookish things.
Yeah.
So who wants to get us started with a book or bookish thing?
I will.
Okay.
So this one is, this book is called Black River Falls by Jeff Hirsik. I think is how you pronounce his last name. And I'm going to read the back for you. When a mysterious virus tears through a small town of Black River, it spares residents' lives but takes something as just as precious, their memories. 6 months later, the people of Black River are quarantined, surviving the rations and police by governed forces with their memories erased. They've all been transformed, some for better, some for worse. 17-year-old Cardinal Cassidy has escaped the virus, but he can't escape its devastating impact on his home and family. He chooses to remain deep within the quarantine zone, living in a mountain camp with the town's former bully, now his best friend. Together, they look after a group of orphaned kids and do their best to move on. But then an enigmatic young woman appears. A pirate corporation takes control of Black River, and the safe, closed-off world Cardinal has created begins to crumble. Thrilling and thought-provoking. Jeff Hirsik's Black River Falls is an unforgettable story that redefines the meaning of survival, identity, and family.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, I started reading it a few days ago, so I didn't get that far, but yeah.
But you like it so far?
Yeah, I like it so far, but I've been kind of busy also because I have school and I have to read other books like Esperanza Rising.
Mm-hmm. Is a choice reading?
Yeah, this is a choice reading. And also, this book is for my sister. And I know this because I'm pretty sure it's from like the book festival because it says Force to Seal, Enjoy. And then it has a signature in here.
Yeah, I was looking up the book. And it looks like it's Jeff Hirsch who has been at the book festival. So.
Oh,
good detectiving.
Yeah.
Do you know if your sister read it and liked it?
I'm going to go ask her right now. But I don't think so. I don't really know. I'm going to go ask her. So I'll tell you when I get an answer.
I really missed having the Hudson Children's Book Festival this year. That's one of my favorite events every year. I know it's yours as well.
I was very sad.
Yeah.
I did not get to see a lot of my friends.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
A lot of the authors I visit every year, I didn't get to see them. Mm-hmm. I was very sad.
Yeah. I'm hoping that we can have an in-person book fair this year. But if not, I'm hoping that they try out doing a virtual one. So I've been to a couple virtual book festivals. And they're obviously different because they're not focused on selling books, but they often have like author talks or panels. So you get to hear from different authors, and that's very interesting. And we miss doing our radio show this year too, because we always do the Bookfest radio show. Sad, sad.
That's one of my favorite things to do is the Book Festival radio show. I was very sad when I
was here. What's the radio show?
No, I'm talking about like the book festival radio show.
Oh, so every year when there is a book festival, Bound by Books does a special broadcast the day before the book festival where we have different authors and illustrators come on the radio and talk about their books and their life as authors and illustrators. And it's really fun. We take over the afternoon show, so it's a bit longer than our regular show. But because they didn't have one this year, you didn't get to do it.
Oh.
No fun. I mean, yeah. We still had fun, but we didn't take over that show. And we didn't get to talk with our friends.
Yeah.
But hopefully this coming year. Maybe if there isn't a book festival and if there isn't a virtual book festival, maybe we can try to do a Zoom with some of our favorite book festival authors and invite them on. That could be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Did you get your answer from Cecile?
No.
No. Oh, well. It's okay.
I'll text you the answer after the show. And then we can say that for next week.
Do you get a lot of hand-me-down books from your siblings?
No, not really. We started actually getting rid of some books because some of them we didn't read, but we gave it to like other people. But like, I have this one hand-me-down book series that I don't think I can even give away, which is the Percy Jackson series. Yeah.
That was actually what I was thinking of in terms of hand-me-downs, because I remember you talking about that you had started reading that series with Calvin.
Oh, no. Calvin read it to me while I was trying to go to sleep.
Did it help put you to sleep or did it help keep you up?
It kept me up.
Yeah. Sometimes that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Although if I try to listen to an audiobook, if I have my eyes closed and I'm lying down, I will inevitably fall asleep. I can't not fall asleep if I'm listening to an audiobook lying down, my eyes closed. It's impossible. It's the best way to fall asleep if I'm having trouble falling asleep, except that I also then will wake up soon thereafter. So I'll fall asleep and then I'll wake up and be like, wait, I'm like 5 chapters ahead and like I've got headphones in my ears and it hurts. It's a real struggle.
I wish I could just like go to sleep listening to an audiobook and then just wake up and just subconsciously know everything that has happened up until the point where I am. I wish the human body could do that.
That would be pretty cool. Think how many books you could read just like listening to them in your sleep.
Yeah.
Because sometimes my to-read list, well, not sometimes, all the time, my to-read list is way bigger than I could possibly read in my entire lifetime. And then it keeps getting added to. So even though I check some off the list, it just keeps getting added to and added to over time. So imagine if I could like sleep read. That'd be really life-changing. Scientists should really work on that.
Maybe eventually, but not now.
Yeah, they got more important things to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting listening to you read the description of your book too, because it was like all these words are jumping out like about viruses and quarantine. It's a very timely read, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to hear from you if you see any connections to like pandemic life.
Just reading like the description for the book, which I didn't read originally, actually just made me think, huh, quarantine, virus, sounds kind of like the coronavirus.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes people like to read books that are connected to what's like going on in the world, and sometimes people like to escape them. So you're diving right in. More virus for you, but hopefully not in real life.
Yeah, hopefully.
Just in the books. We'll keep safe.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I hope you enjoy that. Amelia, what did you want to talk about today?
I finished reading some stuff for American Literature. I finished reading Huckleberry Finn, which was really interesting. Especially, I learned that it's a pretty widely known as like one of those books that gets banned very often. It gets banned now because of the language in it, and it got banned when it was originally released because people feared that it would corrupt the youth. So that was an interesting fact I learned about Huckleberry Finn. And then I've also been rereading The Great Gatsby for my psychology project, which is going to be very fun. Have I told you about the psychology project yet? I can't remember if I have.
You mentioned that you were doing something where you had to like psychoanalyze a character from.
Yes, yes. I've explained the project to so many people that I can't remember who I've said it to or not. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I'm doing that for. So that's going to be fun.
You're enjoying that so far?
Yes, I am.
Are you basing it on like book Jay Gatsby, movie Jay Gatsby, or some combination of the two?
A combination of the two, because the movie that was directed by Baz Luhrmann does a pretty good job at adapting the book. So I trust both sources enough to give me like an accurate depiction of Jay Gatsby as a character. Plus, it's more fun to look at Leonardo DiCaprio than it is to read the book at times. So,
sure. Yeah, he's a good actor.
Yeah.
And that movie, I mean, Baz Luhrmann's stuff is always beautiful.
And his stuff is beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Is that due soon or is it?
It's due on December 6th. So I have some time, but I'm getting ready for it now.
I can't believe your first semester of college is almost over.
I know.
Going so fast.
Yeah.
Have you had a good semester so far?
Yeah, I have. And next year, I've got my classes lined up for next year, too. And next year, I'll be doing a class called World Mythology. So it's probably going to give me a lot of cool stuff to talk about on the show. I can't wait to take mm-hmm. that. So that should be really fun.
Yeah, it will be fun. I'm curious what they'll have you like study and read.
Yeah. And it's not just like, it's world mythology, so it could literally be anything. I'm very mm-hmm. excited.
Nice. All right. I have a picture book that I wanted to talk about this week. You all know how I like picture books, and perhaps in particular, nonfiction picture books. I feel like books written for kids often like give you like a taste of the topic, let you kind of peek in and learn a little bit, but they don't give you so much information that it takes up all your time and like you don't have to commit to reading like a huge book on a certain topic. But I like reading a little bit and then figuring out if I'm inspired to read more and then doing some research online. And this book is called, it's actually a book of poetry, but it's sort of like poetry mixed with biography. So it's called No Voice Too Small, 14 Young Americans Making History. And it is edited by Lindsay H. Metcalf, Kayla V. Dawson, and Jeanette Bradley, and illustrated by Jeanette Bradley. And then it has poems by all sorts of amazing poets, some of whom I was very familiar with and some who I hadn't read before. But it includes Joseph Bruchac, Nikki Grimes, Guadalupe Garcia Mikal, Jean Airey, Leslie Newman, Tracy Sorrell, Carol Boston Weatherford, Janet Wong. And so each of them writes a poem for one young person, like inspired by one young person that's doing great things or has done great things. So some of the people include DJ Annie Red, Ziad Ahmed, Judy Adams, Levi Drahim, Jazz Jennings, Sierra Fields, Noah Barnes, Jaslyn Charger, Marie Copney, Zach Walls, Zaari Kepra, Viridiana Sanchez Santos, Adora Svitek, Marley Diaz. So those are the youth that are portrayed in here. And what they do is they have a poem about the person or inspired by the person, and then they have a little blurb about them. So that I'm guessing that some of those names were not familiar to you, just as they weren't familiar to me. I'd heard of some of them before, but some were totally new to me. And I think that's pretty common that often young people are not given as much attention as like adults that are doing similar work because they're young people. And so they might get some attention, but they don't always get as wide fame, although there are some exceptions to that. But I think this is really great that this book makes sure that their stories and their hard work is given some attention. So I can read this first poem that's not based on a certain person. This one's sort of the introductory poem for the series, and it's called Amplify. And it's a reverso poem by Lindsay H. Metcalf, which means you can read it both ways. So this is it. No voice is too small to solve a problem that's big. A movement can spark within you, your family and friends, your community, your country, within your world. You see a struggle, speak the truth for others to watch changes ripple forward. Ripple forward, changes. Watch for others to speak the truth. You see, a struggle within your world, your country, your community, your family and friends within you can spark a movement that's big. to solve a problem, no voice is too small. And then the little blurb on this one says, meet 14 young Americans who opened hearts, challenged minds, and changed our world. Each activist inspired a poet who relates to an aspect of the activist's identity. Along the way, find tips for how you too can use your own voice to make some noise and make a difference. And so I can show this to my co-host, but the people out there listening can't see it. So you'll see there's a poem and then a little blurb about the person and a beautiful portrait of them. And then there's also this little like lesson that can be learned from their story. So for instance, the first poem in the book that's focused on an individual is about a young woman named DJ Annie Red, who focused on anti-bullying and did so through music and song. And then it has a little description about her that says, when kids teased Samira Horton for her low, raspy voice, she used a microphone to speak even louder. At age 6, she learned how to work a set of turntables and gave herself the stage name DJ Annie Red. Samira raps her song, No, You Won't Bully Me, to empower children in her hometown and across the nation. And then the little lesson to be learned from her is, a catchy tune will stick with people. Set your message to music and people will hum it all day. So they have little things like that for each person, which I thought was very nice. But yeah, so that book is called No Voice Too Small, 14 Young Americans Making History, and it's available to borrow through the library. And I'm sure it's also available to purchase through your local bookstore. Hi, Mashuda. So we just had Mashuda join us. Is Fatia there too?
Yeah.
Hi, Miss Emily.
Hi, Fatia. Do you have any books you want to talk about, either of you?
I do, I think. I have a book for you to read, Miss Emily. It's called, I like love rainbows so much, that's why I made it all rainbow. So I'm going to read this whole entire book. It's not going to take long.
So it's a book that you wrote?
Yeah, that I wrote days ago, I think.
Okay.
I wrote it days ago.
Okay, so you want to share it? Yeah. Okay.
So the title is Rainbows, but the flies can be rainbows sometimes. And like the next page is, how do frogs grow? How do fish grow? I wrote like all different. We have November days. My rainbows can get a bit big sometimes. My school, I have a good day at school. My teachers are the best ones. My friends can be good at school. October, March, November, June, December, and March. I wrote some of them. I love flowers, rainbow one. I love rainbow gold, rainbow wing two. My family can be good all the time. Fatia Janet. Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And this is the like the ending that I made. And this is, so you like the book?
That's very lovely. Thank you for sharing. You're a very good writer and illustrator and reader.
Thanks.
Mashuda, did you have a book you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I have a book I want to share.
Great.
I forgot the title.
I know that title. The books.
Actually, I'm just gonna share a poem. I'm so sorry. Because I can't find the book.
Tell me, like, what it looks
hold
like.
Hold on, hold on.
I can search it for you. I'm not a really good searcher.
Okay, hold on.
I search things bad.
Okay, so the poem I have is Don't Quit. When things go wrong, as they sometime will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low, the debts are high, and you want to smile, but you have to sigh. When care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, don't you quit. Life is poor with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns, and many a feelings about when, and many failure turns out when he might have won. And often the goal is nearer than it seems to a faint and faltering man. Often the struggler has given up when he might have captured the victor's cup. When he learned too late, when the night slipped down, how close he was to the golden crown. Success is failure turned inside out, the silver tint of the clouds of doubt. And you never can tell how close you are. It may be near when it seems so far. So stick to the fight when your heart is hit. It's when things seem worse that you must not quit, like the author is unknown.
What's the name of the poem?
Don't Quit.
Don't Quit by Unknown. Okay. It cut out briefly in part of the poem, so yeah. I don't know if we missed anything, but if anybody out there listening wants to look it up, they can look up Don't Quit poem by Unknown. There might be someone that knows. You know, if the poet is still alive, they probably know they wrote it.
Yeah, maybe they were just like feeling lonely or like sad, and they just let their feelings in the paper.
Yeah, well, it's nice to be able to write to help with those feelings. Or maybe they weren't feeling it at the moment, but wanted to inspire somebody else or both.
It just reminds me of the pandemic.
Yeah, I got to keep going. It is hard some days, for sure, but got to count your blessings. Yeah. Or not count them, but at least recognize them.
And today's really dark.
It is. It's starting to get dark a lot earlier. I can't believe how dark it is. When people are listening to this, it's either evening or morning if they're listening to the radio, because we're on Friday nights and Sunday mornings. But we're recording at...
Wait, today's Friday?
No.
It's 4:30 in the afternoon when we're recording, and it is quite dark outside. I do love seasons. Like, I love living in a place that has real seasons, but I don't know about the darkness. I don't like that quite as much. I like having a nice, long, bright day.
Yeah, me too.
Anyways, we're just about out of time for today, but we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time. We hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving and enjoys their weekend. Take care. Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I have picked wild roses far into September, but I had no one to give the flowers to. I needed the celebration, a September coronation, and I admitted to myself I needed you.
I've watched the gentle winds change the color shades of meadows. I've seen the dew on flowers that had no name. But I let my vase stay empty like my lonely empty heart. Picking flowers for yourself is not the same.
Don't you think it's come our time to be together? Let's gather up our scattered words of love and make them rhyme. Let's go pick some flowers and fill our empty vases. Don't you think it's come our time? Would you take this small bouquet that leaves a fragrance on my fingers and a feeling that your love is close at hand? Don't you think it's come our time to be together? Let's gather up our scattered words of love and make them rhyme. Let's go pick some flowers now and fill our empty vases. Don't you think it's come our time? Don't you think it's come our time?
It was back last October, I believe it was. We was going to hold a tent service all off at this college town. And we got there about dinner time on Saturday. And different ones of us thought that we ought to get us a mouthful to eat before that we set up the tent. And so we got off of the truck and followed this little bunch of people through this small little bitty patch of woods there. And we come up on a big sign. It says, "Get something to eat here." And I went up and got me two hot dogs and a big orange drink. And before that I could take every mouthful of that food, this whole raft of people come up around me and got me to where I couldn't eat nothing, up like, and I dropped my big orange drink. I did. Well, friends, they commence to move, and they want so much that I could do but move with them. Well, we commence to go through all kinds of doors and gates and I don't know what all, and I looked up over one of them, and it says North Gate. And we kept on going through there, and pretty soon we come up on a young boy. And he says, ticket, please. And I says, friend, I don't have a ticket. I don't even know where it is that I'm going. I did. Well, he says, come out as quick as you can. And I says, I'll do her. I'll turn right around the first chance I get. Well, we kept on moving through there, and pretty soon everybody got where it was that they was a-going, because they parted, and I could see pretty good. I could. And what I seen was this whole raft of people a-setting on these two banks and a-looking at one another across this pretty little green cow pasture. Well, they was. And somebody had tucked and drove white lines all over it and drove posties in it and I don't know what all. And I looked down there and I seen five or six convicts a-running up and down and a-blowing whistles. They was. And then I looked down there and I seen these pretty girls a-wearing these little bitty short dresses and a-dancing around. And so I sat down and thought I'd see what it was that was going to happen. I did. And about the time I got set down good, I looked down there and I seen 30 or 40 men come running out of one end of a great big outhouse down there. They did. And everybody where I was a-setting got up and hollered. And about that time, 30 or 40 come running out of the other end of that outhouse and the other bank full, they got up and hollered. And I asked this fellow that was besetting beside of me, I says, friend, what is it that they're hollering for? Well, he whopped me on the back and he says, buddy, have a drink. Well, I says, I believe I will have another big orange. And I got it and sat back down. And when I got down there again, I seen that them men had got in two little bitty bunches down there. They had rail close together. And they voted. They did. They voted and elected one man apiece. And them two men come out in the middle of that cow pasture and shook hands like they hadn't seen one another in a long time. And then a convict come over to where they was a-standing, and he took out a quarter, and they commenced to odd man right there. They did. Well, after a while, I seen what it was that there's odd man in for. It was that both bunches full of them men wanted this funny-looking little pumpkin to play with. They did, and I know, friends, that they couldn't eat it because they kicked it the whole evening and it never busted. But anyhow, what I was telling was that both bunches full wanted that thing, and one bunch got it, and it made the other bunch just as mad as they could be. And friends, I seen that evening the awfulest fight that I have ever seen in my life. I did. They would run at one another and kick one another and throw one another down and stomp on one another and grind their feet in one another and I don't know what all. And just as fast as one of them would get hurt, they'd tote him off and run another one. Well, they'd done that as long as I sat there. But pretty soon, this boy that had said, ticket, please, he come up to me and he says, friends, you're going to have to leave because it is that you don't have a ticket. And I says, well, all right. And I got up and left. And I don't know, friends, to this day what it was that there's a-doing down there, but I have studied about it. And I think that it's some kindly of a contest where they see which bunchful of them men can take that pumpkin and run from one end of that cow pasture to the other without either getting knocked down or stepping in something.
This is Rob around the county, and today I am talking to Gene Laporta, Clavering Town historian. She's going to talk about a bridge that's in Claverick called the Shaw Bridge. Jean, it sounds like a very interesting bridge.
Yeah, hi, Rob. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for inviting me back. The bridge is very interesting. It's an historic structure, and it's located right in the hamlet in Claverick. So did you have any particular questions that you
wanted? Just about, you know, when was it built and what kind of a bridge is it as far as the design? And
okay, sure. It was built in 1870 by a bridge builder by the name of John D. Hutchinson. And he used the design of a famous engineer by the name of Squire Whipple. Squire Whipple's he graduated from Union College, for one thing, in 1830. And he's famous because he designed this unique bridge structure. Before this bridge, I think they were using a lot of wood, flat wood structures, and they didn't use iron. And so he used cast and wrought iron in his design to give it the strength and also the flexibility in the bow structures. And he incorporated that with the wood deck design so that the bridge had strength and that it could have the wooden parts could be replaced as necessary, but without taking down the whole bridge. So in history, you know, the bridges lasted a certain length of time and they would sort of collapse from use and wear and tear and rotting away. And this one was built on his design is a strong stone foundation with those wrought and cast iron beams and structure. So very, very strong skeletal part of that bridge. And so this is the design that Hutchinson used for Shaw Bridge. Shaw Bridge is located on what is now Van Wyck Lane. At the time in 1870 when it was built, that road was the part of the Albany Post Road. 9H was not in existence. So this little Van Wyck Lane was the main route. And it's believed, because of that, it is theorized that New York State actually contracted to build this bridge. That I can't verify, so I can't claim that for fact, but that is the theory. And so they wanted a very strong and sturdy bridge, so it's been in existence ever since then. And I remember it as a child going over the bridge, and it did have a unique feature. It was a one lane, so the traffic on either side had to stop and let the other traffic pass. And then when you went over it, it went kind of something like thumpity thumpity thump as you went over the wooden decking. And I always remember thinking that it didn't sound very, very safe to me. So I was hiding under the dashboard most of the time as we went over it. But anyway, learning and looking back on it now, it was such a safe and sturdy bridge. So it's still there, and the substructure is in remarkable condition. Over the years, we've had a few engineers study it. In fact, we've had two major studies. One was 1979. In fact, my cousin was an engineer. His name is John Testa. He doesn't live in the area any longer, but he was a student of Union College, and he had his thesis was on this bridge. Interestingly enough, I didn't realize it at the time. And we had another one done in, what year was it, by a gentleman by the name of Dr. Let me look at my note. His name with Ryan and Biggs Associate, Dr. Biggs, did the study in 2013. So that was the more recent one. And again, even after all those years, the real strong argument for that bridge was that the substructure was very strong. It needs repair. The decking is gone at this point. It's rotted through and there's plants and stuff growing through it. But the substructure remains in amazingly good condition. So the bridge, this particular design, let me jump back to Whipple. He designed it's called a single truss bowstring bridge. So a lot of description for that basic sweeping design with the wooden deck. Van Wyck, our Shaw Bridge, happens to be a double span. So we actually have two arches that go over this stream, and it makes it very visually very pretty. It sits on the stream at a turn. It's pretty to look at. Let me see, what was I going to say here? So this is the only existing double span bridge of this design in its original location in the world. So it's hugely significant. And over time, you know, students and engineering enthusiasts have come to look at the bridge from all over the world, actually. A few years ago, well, there's been different times when groups of residents have gotten together and felt that they wanted to have the bridge repaired and restored. About 1980, the bridge was closed to traffic, and it was left open to foot traffic for a time and then completely closed. The date of that closure, I don't have right in front of me, but it wasn't that long ago, so I think it was like in 1996 or something, that they completely, they put a barrier across it so you couldn't walk there any longer. And if you take a look at it, you wouldn't want to walk on it. It looks a little, you know, there's spaces where you can see down through the boards, and it doesn't look too good. But anyway, so a group of citizens got together and felt like they wanted to open it up to foot traffic as a walking bridge and as a historic site for visits, and you know, make it look appealing, park-like, and inviting to nature lovers and so on, who would want to, you know, maybe study the bridge and just, you know, something nice to do for the town of Clarick and the people. And so there was quite a movement to do that. It boiled down to requiring quite a bit of funding to oversee the entire process of restoring that bridge. So that's where it's stalled. It's kind of sitting there in, you know, in a waiting mode while, you know, people decide how best to go about that process. And we did have the William G. Pomeroy Foundation awarded a grant for the New York State marker to be placed at the bridge entrance, so we do have a marker for it. That marker is, we had a ceremony down there. We had a commemoration of that marker in May of 2016. And quite a number, about 50 people attended, and it was quite a pleasant day. It was a beautiful, warm day. And we had the marker unveiled at the site. But the town put it in a kind of a temporary fixture there. And about 2 years later, the marker disappeared. Somebody had taken it from the site. So, you know, we posted some requests for the return of the marker, and about 3 or 4 months later, it appeared. As it left, it appeared back there, a little dinged up, a little muddy, but it was returned to the site. And so as a result of that disappearance of that marker, whether it was a joke or whatever, I don't know. I don't know what they would do with the marker, you know, for any reason. It's now in safekeeping in the town transportation department. So until they place it permanently. The reason why it's not placed permanently at this time is pending. If work is to be done on the bridge, they didn't want to have to move the marker again. So we have a beautiful blue and yellow New York State style marker. As I said, it's in safekeeping off-site. But pictures of it are available. So I have pictures of it. I have the whole write-up about this Shaw Bridge on Clarick History Minute on Facebook. So if you go on to Facebook and just, you know, go in the search bar and look for Clarick History Minute, you can type in Shaw Bridge, and that should populate right up there for you to see. You know, and it's pretty. And when you look at the bridge, I think when you see the pictures of it and the marker, the significance of it, I think it just does generate a lot of interest and maybe some enthusiasm for getting it finally repaired for people to use as, a footbridge. A lot of people in the neighborhood like to walk as a form of exercise, and having the bridge just extends that ability to walk over the Columbia Creek and out to the other side. And, I think it's a pretty walk. So, I mean, that's an option. It's something to think about, whether, hopefully people will consider it and, put some support behind that effort. And so that's about the story of the Shaw Bridge. I think I covered about all the real pertinent details. Rob, did you have any particular interests or...
I was wondering, you said the bridge is on your Facebook site. Maybe you could give my listeners the name of the official name for that Facebook page.
Okay, sure. It's Facebook, of course. You'll log on to Facebook as you normally would if you have an account there. And you'll put in the search bar, Clawbrook History Minute. And that brings you to the Clawbrook History Minute page. I developed that Clawbrook History Minute page when I first became the historian in the town as a means of using, kind of a popular social media to get little bits and jots of history out there to the public. And hopefully, to some extent this has happened, that there would be some, dialogue and a sharing of ideas and memories about the town. I wrote the story up when we did the commemoration in 2016 for the historic marker at the site, and I placed pictures of that marker and the bridge and some of the ceremony and wrote up a little history of the bridge for that site, so that it kind of fleshes out what I've talked about here this morning.
Have you been in touch with the Columbia County Historical Society as far as... have you ever submitted anything? Have they ever done any article in their magazine?
Whether they have, I am sure they must have in the past, but I haven't particularly seen anything. You mean in their History and Heritage magazine?
Yes. Maybe you could make a query to it, because it would be interesting. Then we could find out, and then that could be another source. If an article was written on it, the people could look for it, too.
Correct. And, yeah, that's a really good idea. I could let you know that at another time. If the announcement of that, I definitely will find that out. And, definitely. And if not, that's a good idea for the future. I could maybe suggest that we do that. So I'm almost certain that they must have over the years, because this discussion about, renovating and repairing the bridge, at one point they actually did want to reopen it to traffic, and they had a big meeting down there with the Clawbrook Historic Society was actively pursuing that angle. They had a petition going around at the time. Some of the neighbors in the immediate vicinity did not want it opened. And the reason being, people would use this neighborhood as a crossroads between 9H and 23, avoiding the 23-9H traffic light. And the traffic sometimes that you might encounter there with the post office and at the time the store. So the traffic would zip through here, but they went very fast. So we had, children in the neighborhood, and there was some safety concerns. So rightfully, people did say, they had some questions about opening that to vehicular traffic again. And I think that in more recent years, since 2016, when we did the sign commemoration, and actively our historic advisory committee was actively supporting the notion of opening it, but opening it only for foot traffic. So the goal really to maintain the bridge, to keep it in good repair, so that it's a a historic artifact that we can study and not allow it to crumble into disuse and abandon. So in the summertime now, when you go by, you'll see a lot of trees and bushes. And honestly, the town does go in and clean it up. You know, they'll mow it and cut some of that stuff down so that it doesn't completely take over. But it is more and more becoming engulfed in all the brush and stuff like that. So it's less and less visible, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So that's a shame, because it's quite a feat and quite a gift to our town. Some of these bridges, there is one that was relocated to the Union College campus, mm-hmm. and that one was, of course, fully restored and put on the campus as a, you know, engineering study. And then I can't tell you how many of the Whipple design bridges were used for the Erie Canal. I think the number may be in the hundreds. Of those, maybe a few of them have survived. There's a few that have been moved, but not in their original location. So there is one of the Whipple design bowstring truss bridges located in a city in Japan. And I think that's called the Hachiman Bridge or something similar to that. So it does reach some international interest for that reason. And it's quite a pretty design. It's sweeping and arched and simple. So it's got a nice quality to it. And as I said, engineering students love to look at it. And did I say that it was the first scientifically based bridge? So it actually had a mathematical calculation of load bearing, the notion that, you know, the distance and strength supported the weight that was on it. I had read an interesting article about a bridge that was built in Stockport, and they said that the load test was that they drove a wagon loaded with a heavy cargo over the bridge, and that since the bridge was able to withstand that very heavy load, they knew that it was good for the rest of the traffic. That was quite a test. Maybe that's what they did, but it's like, it struck me as a very funny way to do a load test after you spent all that time and effort to build the bridge, and then, you know, not knowing whether it would support it or not, it could fall down in the process. So this bridge was calculated, you know, by its distance and weight and strength to hold. So the first of its kind in many respects.
You know, at the least, I think, if they could cut more of those brush, you know, at least make it visible. I think if it was seen, more interest would be of it. You know, people would notice it.
Correct. You know, it's tucked back in the neighborhood, now tucked back. At the time it was built, as I said, this was the primary route. So people pass through here. This was a public conveyance here. But nowadays it's tucked into the back of